when you need to know what's going on around the world and at home. Keep it on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
You're with Dr. Robert Brennan, and my very special guests, that's guests plural, is Tammy Woodham and Randall Crocker. Tammy is a media influencer, freedom fighter, and has been for the last 2.5 years, yeah, it's about 27 months, after losing her job in real estate. Tammy is at the forefront of helping organise many protests and marches, that's in Melbourne. Tammy also does lots of weekly live interviews with the vaccine injured and has been at the forefront of helping out and obtaining donations for the flood victims. Tammy is behind organising the six-day vigil at Flinders Street Station to promote the Vote Out the Majors, close quote, pertaining to the upcoming election, of course, this coming Saturday, with pre-polling happening now. Now, Randall's background is in marketing and community health, and he's unable to work currently due to the draconian COVID mandates. Randall became involved in the freedom movement 2 years ago also because he believes in our freedom and sovereign rights and that they shouldn't be taken from us. Hear, hear. Randall's current activism work has taken the form of supporting public protests in both Melbourne and Canberra. Both Tammy Jane and Randall are at the Vote the Majors Out vigil. This was the aforementioned vigil at Flinders Street Station, Melbourne, which commenced at 12 noon today and will continue, once again, all the way on up to... they start counting them on Saturday night. It's a 24/7 vigil that has an honouring ceremony, guest musicians, freedom-focused parties and candidate speeches, plus important information on how to vote the majors out. Good evening, Tammy.
Hello, how are you going?
More importantly, how are you going? As my past, immediately past guest was telling me about Battleground Melbourne.
Yes, I know. A lot's been going on in Melbourne, that's for sure.
Right.
We're all right here at the moment. We're just focusing on what's coming up on Saturday with the election and everything, and here to support all of the freedom-focused parties and independents.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And so it started at 12 noon today. So how's it being received by the local community? How's the numbers far?
Yep, so it's been a slow start, but we expected that. It was raining during the day. More people are showing up now as the sun's going down, and people have been quite receptive. You know, we've been giving out how to vote cards, which has a QR code on it, and that teaches people.
QR code, oh my God.
Yes, I know.
I've developed an allergy to them.
Well, people are used to QR codes, you know. Mm-hmm. The people that we're trying to reach are the people who aren't in the freedom community already. Mm-hmm. The people in the freedom community, they already know about all this stuff. So we want to reach the other people who aren't in the community and try and get them to open up and see that there is a lot more than just Liberal, Labor and Greens out there.
Fair enough. For the victims of QR code mania, use a QR code. I guess it is... it is a neutral technology, although wonders whether some technologies are pregnant with so much potential for misuse that maybe.
True. Yeah, true that.
Yeah, and it was raining today. I know how that feels because at the Brisbane protest on the weekend, it was the March of the Umbrellas.
Yes, I saw that. It was amazing. Big numbers you had there.
Nowhere near our biggest. Our largest was before. See, we had a vaccine mandate that came in on the 17th of December, where we were basically cut out of many, many places. And so the one before that was a mega one, but it wasn't so bad considering.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
good.
And much respect to Tricky Tritty and the organisers of the Risen One. So, so raining today, but it's starting to build up ahead of steam.
Yes, we've got people showing up now, more numbers showing up for the vigil. Uh-huh. Some live streamers are here, some key people are here that are at all of the rallies. Mm-hmm. We're about to hit peak hour here with the foot traffic with people finishing work. Mm-hmm. So once they all start coming out, we've got a musician here, he'll be playing some music, and we'll be approaching everyone as they're walking through the area.
Okay. And do you feel that, because have you also been involved in the Melbourne protests, the ones that are periodic?
Yes. Yeah. Yep.
So one thing I observed was that the regulars would turn up and we would march through the streets, and there would be the observers masked, getting out their phones, videoing us like some sort of oddity. But unlike times past and in other places where, you know, let's say the great Indian protest marches in India, where they gather people from the villages, nobody seems to come and join us, think, hey, wait a minute, I want to be part of this. It's like they've already made their decision.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because we do get those people standing on the sidelines filming, but occasionally our numbers will build as we're marching, and whether that's spectators joining in or not, I'm not sure. But it is interesting. But look, I think the main thing is they're watching, they're taking notice. They might go home and show their friends and family that video that they just took, and it gets the message out there, you know?
Yes, which is so much more than just draconian COVID policy or the vaccines. Okay. And the other thing I noticed was there was an inflection point, like I mentioned, the one before the mandates came in on the 17th of December up here in Queensland. The numbers went from large to extremely large and attracted a lot more of the, like, let's say, the attendees beforehand were those who were, you know, there was a fair dose of counterculture people and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But then lots of conservatives and, you know, regular folk and people who were really impacted by the loss of job or impending loss of job. So do you notice that we're spreading out to attract more and more walks of life?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, our rallies last year, just before Christmas, we had hundreds of thousands of people. A couple of them had over 500,000. And a lot of those people were, you know, nurses, teachers, police, people from the police force, people who owned businesses, you know, career-focused people who had been affected, you know, by the lockdowns or the mandates. So, yeah, definitely spreading out to a larger audience.
And so people waking up better late than never.
That's right.
Yeah, that's right. And yours is this isn't a protest march. This is going to be a vigil that goes 24/7. So you're going to camp there?
Well, we won't be camping. If people want to sleep, I mean, you can't say you're camping because as soon as you say you're camping, the police can move you on. You can only use certain terms and you've got to learn all these things. I mean, if people want to sleep, they will. But I have a feeling anyone who stays overnight, they'll just be sitting up all night. I can't see people actually going to sleep in this location. But that's okay, and we'll take shifts. Some people will leave, some people will go home, have a sleep and then come back, and we'll just rotate between us.
Is there going to be any candlelight?
There will be. One of the nights we're going to be doing an honouring ceremony, and that will be honouring all the people that have either lost their lives or they've been you know, emotionally or physically affected by the vaccines or the mandates or the lockdowns. So we'll be doing that on one of the nights, not quite sure when yet.
Yes, because when I see the word vigil, I think about candlelight vigils.
Yeah.
And up here in Brisbane, there's a lady by the name of Jenny who was a Cambodian refugee and so, you know, saw something of the atrocities when she was a child in by the Khmer Rouge. And for the last probably 18 months, she's been having every single week a candlelight vigil outside the Brisbane Children's Hospital with a small group. Yeah, the dedication is amazing. As it is with you, because it's autumn is in full spring in Melbourne and it's going to be some cold nights.
It's going to be freezing.
Yeah, so that's right. And tell us about, have there been any speakers or speeches thus far? And
Not yet. We've got people on megaphones, you know, just giving out information and stuff. And we've got a musician tonight playing music. We have got some independent candidates coming throughout the week to speak and tell us about, you know, their goals and their visions on what they're doing, you know, going into politics. So, yeah, it's a very organic vigil. It'll just keep growing as it goes and it'll just develop as it goes along.
And is there any names about the regarding these Freedom Party candidates and independents?
Yeah, so Damien Richardson is definitely going to be coming down. He's an independent for the Senate. Morgan Jonas looks like he'll be coming down. I've got a couple of people who might be coming from oh God, there was Pauline Hanser's.
One Nation, Pauline Hanser's.
One Nation. I knew it had one in it, One Nation. I've got a couple of people possibly coming from there. Uh-huh. I've also got Chris Burson from Australian Values Party coming down. So there's a handful of people. And yeah, I think that might grow as the word gets out that we're actually doing this, because it's a very good public space for them to come and be heard and help us with the pushback on the majors.
Yes, and tell us something about the musos you've got happening there.
So tonight we've got Ivan Beecroft here. Mm-hmm. He's been a part of the freedom movement for since day one. Mm-hmm. Been up to Canberra, played up there when we did the epic protest up there. And, he's at all the Melbourne rallies as well. So he's coming, and I'm not sure of the others that are coming. Billy from AUM Movement, he's organising them.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not quite sure who's coming.
Okay. Well, it'll be a surprise for attendees.
Yes. That's right.
That's right. Yeah. And I imagine that there'll be some police turning up.
Well, they're already here. We've already got about six police standing out the front now, which is good. I mean, it's good to have them around. If they, they've been very friendly to us today. They said they're here to work with us and support us. So if everything goes to plan, that should be all right.
Mm-hmm. But they're there in small numbers, are they?
Yeah, there's only six of them here.
Okay.
Not many, yeah.
And what's your, we can work back in time to what this all is about in terms of Melbourne. But what's the current lockdown conditions in Melbourne at the moment, if any?
Oh, nothing.
Nothing.
Yeah, there's no lockdowns, nothing. No. The only thing that's happening, which is still a massive big deal, and that's why we keep pushing back having a rally every Saturday, is the mandates are in place for most workplaces, people who cannot work still. They can go and spend their money, but they can't go make money.
But they can't go make money, yes, that's right.
Yeah.
And part of that money spent is on the cost of living, which is going up.
Yes. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. But anyway, did you want to chat to Randall?
We shall do. We'll bring on Randall after. We'll have a break soon. But So you can travel in and out of Victoria. You can travel freely within Victoria. We don't have the 5 kilometre limit anymore. No masks.
No, all of that's gone.
Except there's the occupational mandates that are problematic, that are keeping people out of work.
Or
they're coerced into taking them. And dreadful. And okay. And only a minor number of police there. All right. So far.
Yes. Looking good. They're chatting with us. They're being friendly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. And so we've got Randall there now, have we?
Yes. Randall's here.
Fantastic. Okay. We'll talk to Randall and yourself after the break, because we also want to talk about your experiences this last 2 years that have got you to this point. So we're going to go to a short ad break. This is TNT.
Globalist agendas, democratic rights at risk, corruption, propaganda. It never stops. For the news and views silenced by the mainstream media, by government and corporations, vote one. TNT Radio. Free speech always has a home here. Stay up to date with the latest live news and current affairs delivered by our lineup of expert commentators and hosts. Listen to TNT Radio anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio, or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
Election 2022, and Australia decides on the 21st of May.
Welcome to the latest edition of Who Wants to Be Prime Minister? That's right, today it's Albo versus ScoMo. Who'll be the first to stuff it all up?
Price of bread, $3.50. Cash rate, 0.1%.
All right, let's go, Albo.
Anthony Albanese, welcome to the show. How are you? Oh, yeah, I'm good, thanks.
You're good. 13% of the nation is living under the poverty line, and you're good.
Oh, sorry. I didn't know we'd started.
He didn't even know we'd started. He's not ready. He's not prepared.
I'm prepared.
And Scott Morrison, how are you?
Well, Andrew, I'm busy. Working day and night for all Australians. Unlike Take It Easy Albanese over here.
Devastating first round for Albo. ScoMo is in his element here. Just look at the way he works the media. They're eating out of the palm of his hands.
Albo, what's the current unemployment rate?
Well, the national unemployment rate at the moment is 5
point, no, for, Mr. Morrison?
Jobs.
Oh, come on, that's not an answer.
All right, it's time for the speed round.
Albo, how much is it for a 45-minute Thai massage?
$85.65.
Scott, what has four wheels and flies?
A garbage truck.
Albo, what's the surname of the family of Malcolm in the Middle?
Wilkerson.
Scott, why does Michael J. Fox make the best milkshakes?
Well, he uses the finest ingredients.
Albo, what's heavier, a kilogram of bricks or a kilogram of feathers?
Bricks!
Wrong, they both weigh the same, you f***ing idiot! And Scott Morrison is the winner!
Right, that's it! This was supposed to be an easy win for me and you're all making me look like a bloody idiot! How about instead of trying to trip us up and ask us dumb questions, you ask me some proper questions about our policies!
What's Labor's policy on Australian coal mining?
Mr. Morrison?
Okay, we're done. Thanks, everybody. Bye-bye.
To find out more, visit onenation.org.au.
You're going to need me.
You're going to need us.
All of us.
You're going to need our help with your water, your air, your food.
You're going to need our determination, our compassion.
You're going to need the next generation of leaders to face the challenges the future will bring.
And we promise we'll be there when you need us.
Today, 4-H is growing the next generation of leaders. Support us at 4-H.org.
Democracy in action. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
This is Robert Brennan and my very special guests, freedom activists from Melbourne, Tammy Jane and Randall Crocker. And I hear Randall's here, but he's got a toddle off at, what, 30 past, half past?
That's right, Rob, yeah, if you can.
Okay, yep. So...
And Tammy as well, yeah. Sadly, we've got to get back to business, but yeah, happy to talk.
Okay, all right. Well, I hear tell that you haven't been able to work lately.
That's right.
And I hear that, of course, I mean, the same's happening all over the country, that affecting various occupational groups. So tell us about the impact on you personally and your experience with others out of work.
Okay. Well, my personal experience, of course, is like so many people affected by the mandate. And I was actually studying a pre-transition, a full-time student, moved away from marketing advertising career of some 35 years, and was in the process of reskilling and re-educating at uni as a full-time student, and going to move into my new field of interest this year, but of course cannot because of the mandate. The mandate which came in effectively October last year down here in Victoria. It's been really difficult.
Mm, no doubt. And what about the experience of others? Tell us about the tales of woe.
Well, that's right. The experience is widespread. I mean, it's affected so many people, as I'm sure it has in other states. But some family members are able to work, they're working, but others are not. And it really just depends if you want to, maintain your beliefs about this and, your rights to not participate in a medical procedure, then this is the problem. Okay,
right.
So look, the tales of woe were widespread, and I suppose I could go into it, but it's really a pretty common story, sadly. And we're seeing a lot of nurses, particularly down here, as Tammy may have mentioned, and teachers of recent times down here too, about 2,500 teachers lose their jobs because of the mandates and because of their desire to stick up for their rights of being able to not participate in a medical procedure. It's very, very concerning.
That's a hell of a number, yeah. Yeah.
It is indeed. That's right.
And
so we've had people speaking at the rallies and telling their story, which has been terrific. And as Tammy mentioned, we're trying to appeal to the public and let them know, what exactly is going on. We've got the nurses, of course, as I mentioned, who... And it was only a couple of years ago that, they went from hero to basically zero, those that didn't want to participate, which is right.
Yes. And in pre-vaccine times, I mean, they weren't seen as being this, these terrible risk to others, but then from hero to zero. Yeah.
That's basically it.
And that includes nurses and firefighters and teachers who have been at particular schools or hospitals or stations for many, many years. And then they're like,
"That's right,
yeah." Like yesterday's news.
I know personally many nurses who have been in the industry for decades, literally decades, and they've left. They've had to resign because of the mandate. Yeah. Mm. So, you know, look, widespread ramifications and it's affected employment, you know, from top to bottom here in Melbourne. Mm. We see a lot of businesses being affected. I mean, everybody's – it's amazing how you can walk around the city on a night like tonight and you can see so many notices in shop windows looking for staff. Staff wants it, you know. They talk about unemployment being that 4% or so. We're going to have to be much higher than that to be realistic. You know, there's clearly it's left a lot of holes in the employment sector.
Yes, and then run us through too, because not just a national, we're an international station. So looking back at this horrid past couple of years, you're not locked down now, but the bruises are still there. So let's the litany of all that was done to you by the Daniel Andrews regime.
That's right. Look, we're, as I say, opened up now, and people seem to think they've got their freedoms. Mm-hmm. Granted back to them by the government, of course, which is not freedom, as you and your viewers will probably appreciate.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, we're all able to, you know, enjoy hospitality and go to a restaurant, go to a cafe, get that coffee in a cafe now, as unvaccinated people are like.
Mm-hmm.
But as Tammy said, the mandate still applies to employment.
Mm-hmm.
So as much as we can spend money in Andrew's state of Victoria, we can't earn money.
Mm.
And that's going to be a concern. Of course, potentially a squeeze tactic. You know, I mean, the pressure is still applied to the unvaccinated to participate.
It's a hell of a squeeze tactic. I mean, earning a living punitive. Is kind of a big deal, yeah.
Yeah, it almost seems punitive in many respects, sadly.
It is. That's because it is. Yeah.
That's right. Yes, it is. So, yeah.
Okay. Daniel Andrews was given his blessings by Scott Morrison and Anthony Albanese, both the majors, and of course the Greens are all on board. So tell us, how can we vote out the majors?
Well, voting out the majors is where we're at with this particular vigil this week, mm-hmm. and we also pushed that rally last week particularly. Mm-hmm. Voting out the majors affects both the House of Reps and the Senate, mm-hmm. but particularly the Senate. That's where we're probably likely to have the most success in terms of hanging the parliament and minimising the power of the majors. So we're recommending here voting the majors last in the House of Reps, and we've got a couple of leaflets that explain to the general public in basic terms how to go about that, putting Liberal, Labor, the Greens down the bottom of the House of Reps list. We have to vote for them. They've got to be numbered as part of the sequence in the House of Reps voting ballot paper. But we put them down the bottom to disempower them and put the freedom-oriented parties and candidates basically up the top from one to whatever and three or four majors down the bottom. Okay, so that's the House of Reps. The Senate, of course, here in Victoria has about 25 columns, 24 columns across, and that's a combination of parties and, of course, Senate candidates. And we're voting above or below the line, as usual. Mm-hmm. I understand only about 3% of Australia votes below the line. So we're voting six across the top, and that's going to be anybody's selection. Okay, so it's very important that people don't feel they need to vote for Liberal or Labor or a major party in the Senate. Okay, they can just vote for their choice of freedom parties. I, you know, encourage people to do their own research, but we've got to get some freedom parties in the Senate there to just balance things out and, you know, create some kind of a filter for all of this legislation that's just going through, being approved. You know, it's just a cacophony of legislation going through like an avalanche. And there's some very concerning legislation on the table just at the moment, just built regards agricultural what is it
called? Yes, I heard about that.
Yeah, that's right, a regulatory amendment, okay, which grants the government the ability to go in on farms and confiscate crops or, you know, basically block the food supply. That's what it sounds like.
Well,
they don't need to announce. Mm. They could just roll up and, affect the policy. And it's quite draconian and it's quite concerning. You know? So this is on the table at the moment here in Victoria, sadly. It is.
But this is the most historic election in any of our lifetimes.
Vote. It is, you know.
Liberals, Labor, Greens, last.
That's right. Yeah. And we're seeing more parties than ever in terms of freedom-oriented parties this time around. Yeah. It's the, widest spread of the Senate sheet. I think it's probably almost a metre. But, there's a lot of options. And people are confused, rightly so. I mean, I don't think Australians really pay that much attention to the voting process. You know, it's always historically been, let's get in, let's get out, let's get on with it, you know. But this year it's very, very important to at least let's see how effective our democracy actually is.
That's right.
There's a bit of a question mark on it all, but let's see how effective it is and whether we've got, in fact, any control or power in the system. So let's give it a go.
And don't vote informally. Don't shy away. You've got to go there, make your vote count, and give democracy a try. Even if we're skeptics, that's right.
We can always reassess the situation afterwards and plan accordingly. But let's at least step at a time, give it a go, and just do our best, you know. And we're doing our best down here this week with distribution of information to the public. It's a mixed bag, you know, but we are getting more interest. People are clearly fed up here, and they're wanting to make a bit of a change. So we are getting interest and a bit of sympathy from the MSM-driven public.
Okay, so you got the vigil happening, started at noon today all the way to Saturday, Election Day. That's Flinders Street Station in Melbourne.
That's it.
Be there.
Yep.
Okay, this is TNT Radio.
When you listen to us, you're always guaranteed straightforward, easy-to-understand, coherent conversation.
So I made it a priority my entire career to work closely with you from the time I got to the Senate 180 years ago.
And we stand by those words.
But I made very clear to Putin that we're not going to seek excuse me. So the best way to get something done, if it holds near and dear to you that you like to be able to... Anyway.
Oh, man. Just stop talking.
TNT.
This is TNT, Robert Brennan, and my very special guest and our TNT regular is Jeremy Beck. How are you doing, Jeremy?
Good, Robert. Good to be on again.
Yeah. So tell us, what have you been up to in this lead up to the most historic election in any of our lifetimes, as I keep calling it?
Yeah, sure. Well, on Saturday, I was at the protests in Melbourne and it was electric. It's always great to be at these protests. And this was one of the bigger protests in Melbourne. They have been going on just about every week for the last numerous months. And at one stage, I was attending every single week. And then I figured, I'll just go to the bigger ones. And it was pretty big. And considering it was raining a bit, fortunately, it was like God was there and he switched off the rain just at the right moment as the protest started walking through all the streets. And we walked through all the city streets for about 3 hours. So all that 3 hours, it wasn't raining.
Wow.
Up until then, it was raining a fair bit. So everyone had their wet weather gear on, but it was a pretty good crowd considering. I think, you're going to be dedicated, rain, hail, shine, freedom's worth fighting for. And it was a good show and it's an electric atmosphere.
Wow, 3 hours walking.
Okay. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and the police, of course, they corner off all the streets and they have a liaison with the protest organisers, with the police. And I've found the police are pretty good in general. I know that Melbourne's had some very ugly moments last year in the last couple of years where we've seen some police brutality, rubber bullets, capsicum spray, all sorts of things, people manhandled, some really ugly scenes. Now, that was during the period of the hard lockdown when you weren't allowed to go more than 5 kilometres from your home, and people at that stage were protesting technically illegally. So Dan Andrews' authority presumably gave the green light for some of the police to go heavy-handed. And I'm sure that there were a few police there that really were just living in a state of, I guess you call it this part of this mass formation psychosis, really. I mean, they were part of it just as much as the rest of the population were part of it. And I think some of the police probably at that stage truly believed that we're suffering from this terrible virus. It's going to knock over every second nursing home and kill everyone's granny. And and we're going to go hard line against these protesters. And that's still no excuse for, you know, brutalizing people who are peacefully protesting, but nonetheless that happened. But these days the police I've found very considerate, and I think I wouldn't be surprised if some of them have a bit of sympathy for the protesters.
Yes, but as you say, they were at the time working under different orders, where protesters were technically violating the diktat, or let's call it a law in inverted commas. And so they were following orders, whereas now they're following orders just like they were then, only they're now more peaceful orientated orders. But in so much as they're following orders, it's kind of like the Eichmann defense. You know, I imagine that there are many a person in Melbourne who looks at the cops now and they kind of think, you know, I'm not forgetting and I'm not forgiving.
Yeah, sure. And I fully understand that people who were brutalized by some of the police, and some were definitely heavy-handed. I can fully understand why they feel like that, but I don't think that's representative of most police. In fact, you have people like Crystal Mitchell who resigned from the police force over this very issue. So I'm sure that there are many police who decided not to resign but did share Crystal Mitchell's feelings, and many other police who have resigned. And yeah, it's a big deal to resign as a policeman or policewoman, and you don't do that lightly. I'm sure many didn't resign but took the jabs and just, you know, sucked it up and kept on their job, but really weren't comfortable with it.
Yes, just as the documentary was called Battleground Melbourne, with the scenes of, you know, of a kinetic battle, there's the battle within one's conscience. What do you do when you're when the likes of Daniel Andrews tells you to turn against your own people? Some relish it, but as you say, some like Crystal were the heroes who left entirely. They answered their conscience in a very fulminant sense. But then there's all these sort of grey area people where it's like, could they have done more? Could they have done less, depending upon what we're talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's speaking for myself, I think that those who would abdicate conscience and just following orders, they're still in the ranks, and the danger is that, well, the orders could be different next week with an emboldened Andrews regime if Albanese wins.
Yeah,
yeah.
And it is a danger. The opinion polls are showing that we'll have a Labor government. Now, I think that seems to be likely, but you never know. There are all sorts of anomalies that are occurring, and the mainstream media are very, very opposed to the freedom parties and independents. So I think that they believe their own propaganda from time to time, and they'll dismiss that element of it and just emphasize these Green 200 candidates, the Climate 200 group, and make out that that's the biggest concern Australians have. I don't believe it for one minute. This is just a concocted, engineered experiment with these independent candidates pushing all this climate net zero carbon, absolute nonsense. In fact, I've got one in my own electorate that's pushing that, and, you know, it's happening all over these leafy green suburbs of, they call them the doctor's wives, the
doctor's
the demographic that they want to attract.
Yes, well, they must be older ones, because in my generation of medical school had already flipped to probably a little over 50% were girls. Yeah, while we're being sort of sexist in our stereotypes, I guess they're much more organized in their studying.
yeah, to get in there. And they mature earlier, so, you know, we're at a disadvantage, our gender. So, yeah, I mean, like, when it comes to the subject of police, I guess, like, I've stepped down from my, radio announcer, radio correspondent, whatever you call it, into my personal self, because my wife was arrested up here by police for failing to follow the diktat of our chief health officer. So, you know, so my message to all police out there is you don't get to say you are just following orders. That's a moral cop-out that either here and the hereafter won't be good enough. So so I hope that you look back and find that you have nothing you regret, because we'll be looking back.
Definitely.
So on that note, cheery note, we'll go to a short ad break. This is TNT.
The midterms and America votes on November 8th. With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Jeremy Beck.
All 22 Donald Trump-endorsed candidates won their respective Republican primaries in Indiana and Ohio in what was considered a test of the former president's power as a GOP kingmaker. With more than 130 endorsements in midterm races to date, Donald Trump's influence will be very significant through to the November midterm elections. Trump has not been shy in endorsing some controversial candidates. For instance, 8 of his endorsements for Indiana and Ohio voted to overturn the 2020 election results. One of them was Warren Davidson, who compared vaccine and mask mandates to practices in Nazi Germany. "The Nazis dehumanized Jewish people before segregating them," he tweeted in January. Trump endorsed him a few weeks later on the 9th of February. The results of the upcoming GOP primaries in the months ahead will be very interesting. I'm Jeremy Beck for TNT Radio.
As an Olympic athlete, I prepare for everything. So when I became pregnant, I thought I was ready. But at 32 weeks, I was diagnosed with severe preeclampsia and had an emergency C-section. Looking back, had I known the warning signs, I would have talked to my doctor sooner. Too many women die of pregnancy-related complications, and most are preventable. If you or someone you know is pregnant or recently had a baby, learn the warning signs. It could help save her life. Hear her.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative, this is Viewpoint.
For decades, senior government and intergovernmental organization officials have peddled fear with climate change alarmism. In June 1989, Noel Brown, director of the New York Office of the United Nations Environment Program, said that governments had a 10-year opportunity to arrest the greenhouse effect before it went beyond human control. He claimed that entire nations could be wiped off the face of the earth by rising sea levels if the warming trend was not stabilized by the year 2000. In reality, global carbon dioxide emissions from fossil fuels and industry were 62% higher in 2021 than in 1989, and sea level has barely changed.
This is TNT Radio, where you meet the entire menagerie of mankind and some who haven't yet been cataloged. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
This is Robert Brennan and my very special guest and TNT regular, Jeremy Beck. So, yeah, we were talking about something that you're concerned about, and rightly so, and this is a Climate 200 group. And, the metropolitan, bourgeois, very wealthy, environmentalist green voter, or Climate 200, quote-unquote, independent voter. And so, yeah, what's your take on all that? Because I was discussing this with a previous guest.
Mm.
Yeah, what's your take on that? Because
yeah, sure.
Yeah,
I think it's a genuine fear some people have, and the fear is just completely irrational because the evidence shows that the climate does change. But what we're seeing right now is nothing really out of the ordinary. But people are genuinely afraid, just the same as they were genuinely afraid about COVID or anything else that the media just pumps out nonstop. They're just reacting to that. But just to have a hard look at the evidence, and the reality is completely different. If you consider that we have a regular glacial interglacial cycle, and that's about a 100-year cycle, And at the moment, we're just very fortunate to be living in this warm interglacial part, which has been ongoing for the last 15,000 years thereabouts. But 20,000 years ago in the Ice Age, the Aboriginal Australians living in Tasmania could easily walk to the mainland Australia and back and forth because Bass Strait did not exist. Mm-hmm. And then we had natural warming, and these were parts of natural cycles and their orbital cycles of the Earth and the solar cycles and so forth, a lot of natural things that cause climate change. And the sea levels rose about 120 metres. So you now have Bass Strait, and the Tasmanian Aboriginals, they obviously couldn't get back to the mainland. But before then, they could walk. Now, here we're worried about a few millimetres of sea level rise, and we're told it's a climate crisis. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just nuts. But people believe this because they're told by the mainstream media. And if you tell a lie often enough, it doesn't matter how absurd the lie is. If you just repeat the lie and repeat it and repeat it, well, a lot of people end up swallowing it. And it's pretty sad because a lot of these candidates are pushing this. They probably believe it themselves. Mm-hmm. It's part of another mass formation psychosis, the climate mass formation psychosis.
Yes, well, I guess sincerity makes for someone more convincing to themselves, of course, but also to others. And but I'm just wondering about the psychology behind it, and this group of wealthy metropolitans who go for the Greens or Climate 200, and just free associating here, you're talking about a cyclical model of history as regards the climate. And the conservative movement would I imagine that they're perhaps motivated by the idea that of the fallen nature of man. Certainly the libertarian side of the right would be concerned with the fallen nature of man, and that, you know, it's best to just minimize the damage we make upon one another. But even there, there's either a static or a cyclical model of history. There isn't the progressivism. So that I wonder if that the progressive mind, who thinks that history is moving in a particular direction, not just for mankind, but also for the planet. And so it's that kind of meta view that informs them thinking, oh, the planet's we're going to boil like Venus. And so we've got to do something about it. And we've got to do something about it by, in a sort of a linear model of history, by creating some sort of utopia.
Interesting points you make there. And often the so-called progressives, they consider themselves to be left of centre, left wing. Mm-hmm. I don't see that they are progressive at all. I think they've hijacked that word, mm-hmm. because at the end of the day, the kinds of policies they're pushing would send us back to the Stone Age, mm-hmm. and put us in grave, grave trouble. The problem is that these people, they believe that we're overpopulated, we're chewing up all these resources and are polluting the planet, and we're going to wipe out the species, and it's all doom and gloom, and there are limits to growth. Now, the problem is that the economy is constantly changing with creative ideas. And before the internal combustion engine, before the steam trains were using horses and carts and whatnot, and back then we had Thomas Malthus, who said that the world was overpopulated in 1800 when we only had 1 billion people. It was overpopulated and there are limits to growth, and that was the ideology. And they couldn't obviously conceptualize that we'd have a completely different world with whole new technologies. So back then it might have seemed like if we had 10 billion people, we'd have all the streets filled up with horse manure. Mm-hmm. It's just totally absurd because technologies change. Now, we need nuclear power. That's mm-hmm. the next leap. We can go to fission, which is current technology. The next technology will be fusion. We know fusion exists. That's how the stars work. Mm-hmm. So there'll be whole new layers of technology. So the whole idea of this limits to growth is based on a lack of imagination of our creativity and our ability to have scientific change.
So you're saying that we'll tech our way out of it, which is quite possible.
Well, I think that any worry of limits of resources right now are very premature.
Mm-hmm.
And at the moment, I know from scientific principles, and I have an engineering background.
You do.
From scientific principles, I know that we have ample resources to easily lift up every single one in the world, 7 billion people, up to a decent living standard, the same that you'd have in Australia or any Western country, including all Africans and everyone in poor countries. We could easily upgrade their living standard to a decent living standard. And we wouldn't be polluting the world if we went to modern technologies that exist today, mm-hmm. such as nuclear power. And there are new whole generations of nuclear reactors, which are very safe. They're not the old Chernobyl-style reactors.
Mm-hmm.
Very safe, this fourth-generation nuclear power. And then aside from uranium, we can also utilize thorium, which is another element. And there's no way you'll run out of uranium or thorium anyway. There's oodles of it there. Mm-hmm. And then there's reprocessing of resources. Mm-hmm. Now, we use recycling today, but there's whole new technologies that you could use in recycling, not the silly recycling that we do today, which is very labor-intensive and sorting out your bottles from your glass and whatnot and putting it out in the street. I'm thinking of the kinds of recycling of materials such as in a fusion torch,
mm-hmm.
where you could just spit all the garbage into a processing plant, have it at super high plasma temperatures, and you could sort out different elements and shoot it out the other end, and you could sort out the useful elements in the periodic table into new resources rather than just going to landfill. So there's so many mm-hmm. ideas you could do there to maintain very high living standards with a growing population. And then the mind boggles to what's possible in hundreds of years when we're long past. Future generations will have to solve those problems. But I suggest that we'll be looking further afield to space and colonizing mm. other planets.
Mm. Which is interesting, because it was just the other day when I saw the original Planet of the Apes. So it has a different take, but that's for those who haven't seen it, I won't give it away. Yes, what you say about Malthus, and there was also what Ehrlich and the population bomb back just a few decades ago, sort of preaching doom and gloom. But on the recycling, it seems that we best not look under the hood too much, because it's from what I've read, it's not very efficient at all. And here's an example. It was only a couple of years back when Canada, they put all their recycling on these gigantic freighter ships, and it went all the way to the Philippines to deal with in some way that probably isn't real recycling. But they had some sort of political issue or trade issue or something. So this giant diesel-powered freighter goes off in the direction of Canada again. It's not very environmentally friendly.
Mm, but, definitely not.
So you're imagining a future where we might have better technologies to deal with waste, and you're talking about nuclear power that's safe, I imagine, for a stable geology that Australia has inland.
Hmm.
Yeah. And what about, do you know about this story about helium-3? I hear tell that on the moon there's some source of energy that if we could only get it down here, it'd be incredible.
That's true. Helium-3 is useful for fusion. And I know the Chinese government has been looking at the moon to potentially mine helium-3. You'd only need a spaceship full of helium-3, and that would be enough to power a whole nation for years. So you could invest a lot of money into setting up the infrastructure, and very capital intensive, but because it's such an energy dense nuclear fuel, it's economic to consider it.
Mm.
That's for the future. At this stage, we still haven't mastered fusion power yet.
Mm.
But I could see that being a possibility for the future. Even if we don't develop fusion, the power of fission is enormous.
Mm-hmm.
And the fourth generation nuclear reactors show a lot of promise just with regular uranium. But then again, there's the thorium that I mentioned before. There are a whole lot of new different sorts of reactor designs. There's the pebble bed reactors. There's molten salt reactors. So I see nuclear power as the path to the future. But the problem is our government has just ignored it. And they've gone down the path of net zero carbon. Without nuclear power, it's just complete insanity. It's not going to happen. They'll might give it a bit of a try, but the more they try it, and we've already had a bit of a try so far, and it's not been very effective. I think South Australia has more of the wind and the solar power than anywhere else in Australia, and the highest electricity bills.
Yes, and it's hard to reconcile with their other plans of economic expansion and housing development and all of these sorts of things, making mortgage slaves out of all of us. The amount of energy consumption that goes into building a house. Or if we can, as Marie Antoinette said, let them eat cake, let them all have a Tesla, but then where does the Tesla get its electricity from?
Coal-fired power stations.
That's right. And so, yes, so... So the Metropolitan Greens voter can feel very good about themselves, either because they have the money to buy into an inner suburb where they don't have to commute via car, or they can afford the Tesla, and yet it's just displacing the problem, because schmo has to live out in the outer suburbs, or they have to buy a regular fuel combustion vehicle. Yeah.
And the lithium batteries in those Teslas are very difficult to recycle. Mm-hmm. And generally speaking, they'll just end up going to landfill. But at the end of the day, the amount of mining that will be involved in a so-called renewables economy would totally rip apart the planet if they're worried about protecting the environment. Imagine mining all the resources necessary for the wind turbines, which are made out of big heavy steel poles that go all the way up, and the copper wiring in them, and the concrete that's needed in the base of the wind turbines, and then all the electricity power lines that go to the wind farms, because when you have a wind base economy, you need many more power lines that you have to build out to all these isolated hills, the batteries, of course, and then the other batteries, not just in the cars, the other batteries that they're using to store that wind power, just in massive battery packs, that is just completely nuts. So if you look at the economics of that, it's just insane what they're proposing. And nuclear power is the most environmentally friendly and at the same time, the most economic way of the future. I'm all for using coal at the same time, providing we use the latest technology coal-fired power reactors. The coal is not as dirty as people think, because there are things called electrostatic precipitators, which basically attract the little nasty bits of soot by, it's like static electricity, and basically clean gases flow up the top of the chimneys. And the dirty gunk gets attracted by these electrostatic precipitators. So mostly the emissions are just water vapor and carbon dioxide. And carbon dioxide's the good bit. That's what plants use to grow, photosynthesis.
So imagine like there's a zone of sort of reconciliation between two worldviews or two worries here, where you could have coal power, as you're saying, but you could have emissions technology within that coal-fired power station that minimises harmful emissions, and then you have carbon dioxide, so you could have like a forest sink around it, All sorts of ideas if we put our mind to it. This is TN. We could speak for a couple of hours. It's a pity it's only 30 minutes. Maybe in the future. This has been Jeremy Beck, this is Robert Brennan, and this is TNT.